Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Two of Australia's leading MVPs, presenters, bloggers, and all-round Microsoft tech nerds. Robert Crane. He's an Office 365 MVP and the director of CIA Ops. Mark Keane. He's a Microsoft Azure MVP and an Azure / PowerShell Premier Field Engineer working at Microsoft. All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. And brought to you by Ingram Micro Cloud. Streamline the provisioning, billing, and management of your clients' popular cloud business applications, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SkyKick, and more, with the Ingram Micro Cloud Marketplace and Cloud Store. Registrations for the Ingram Micro Cloud Summit 2017 across Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane are now open at www.ingrammicrocloudsummit.com.au. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You're listening to another episode of the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane. Right here, right now, but not over there is Mark Keane. Mark, well,
geez, Rob, a bit rusty this evening.
I think it's forgetting somebody else back on the podcast for a change.
Forgetting me out. Just Need to Know. It's a podcast. Is it a live thing or something, or live event happening? Facebook live event. Are you sure it's a podcast?
No, we can make it a video, but I think you'd spoil the picture. So let's just keep it as a podcast and keep it clean.
Hey,
for
takes one to know one, Rob.
Well. We all know what you're like, Mark. That's the sad thing about it. And your fans are screaming for more, so you're back once again for now, episode 164.
Well, we've done it, 164. And you know what? We've got two sponsors, not one, but two. And they are?
They are Ingram Micro Cloud and your favourite?
Rode Microphones. Fantastic. Love it. Loving every minute of it.
And we thank them for their support of our podcast. We couldn't survive without them, that's for sure. I know Mark would go absolutely bananas if he didn't have a Rode microphone under his nose when he does the episode for us. So
that's right. And also, too, you've got to thank our listeners, because it wouldn't be a podcast, wouldn't be it without people listening. So it's all part of the ecosystem. Oh, speaking of which, Rob. I'm off to Adelaide next week. Actually, tomorrow. Excellent. I fly out. So we're recording this, by the way, on a Saturday evening. Yeah, we're not out drinking and partying. We actually do spend our personal time doing awesome things. And yeah, I'm off to Adelaide next week for work and spending a week with a certain Microsoft customer. And I'm catching up with a certain listener down in Adelaide. Do you know who that might be?
Let's save that for, I suppose, a surprise. Let's
a surprise.
Let's surprise.
Okay, can we give out the initials as a clue? No, maybe not.
No,
okay.
No. Well, you do whatever you want. You're talking to him, right. So you're the one that can.
All right. There's blow a certain cover and there's get a certain cloud and data center, cloud and something data center MVP in Adelaide, which I'll be catching up with, and I'll take the microphone with me, and we will do some sort of recording with him down in Adelaide, because he is down in that part of the world, and look, it's all part of Australia. It's a nice little area to be, nice little boutique city, as you might want to describe it as. And so we'll get a nice little recording out of him. Because Rob, you were saying before going through the episodes that some of the ones we've done in the past are quite popular and some of them aren't. The ones that are more popular are the ones that are?
Basically where we give people something that they can take away and use in their business. So the SBS Azure one was very popular, unsurprisingly, so we probably need to focus on some of those, and we'd ask people to let us know what they'd like to focus on. But that certainly seems to be the most popular ones we've done of late.
Okay, so we'll speak to this Adelaide-based MVP, Microsoft Most Valuable Professional, in relation to something real life that people can relate to, and hopefully we'll get some listeners back up again.
So you're not talking to about unicorns?
And we're not talking to him about this
no
button either, no, exactly.
Oh, it must be rainbows. I'll look forward to hearing the episode.
So you're the only single listener that happens on those episodes where we get one listener. It's you. You're the one who loves unicorns and the no buttons.
So why would I listen to the own podcast? Am I trying to basically inflict my double the amount of pain by being live and then listening again? Guess, I don't think so.
Guess what, Rob?
I would guess probably 4,392.31427.
No, talking about more millions. So I'm moving right along to the millions of dollars being saved. So this is like one of the news articles that came out. It was published on a blog post last week. Saving millions, millions, millions of dollars by fine-tuning Microsoft Azure usage, which, you know what? Microsoft Azure, going great guns at the moment. Everyone's moving to the cloud. But here's the very popular part at the moment. This is the coolness, is the fact that you need to save as much money as possible. A guy named Rick, who works in the Microsoft Core Services Engineering Department, which is for Microsoft IT, focuses on cloud adoption and cost optimization. And he's one of the many engineers who has been part of the very large transformation of reinventing Microsoft IT systems internally and creating new ways to solve problems. As Microsoft IT have migrated and rebuilt the bulk of their systems on cloud platforms, the focus somewhat changes, and they have had to reinvent how to effectively manage their cloud infrastructure, which equates to saving millions of dollars. So there you go. There's a bit of a clue, Rob, as far
as
when they...
Are you saying that like Dr. Evil? Like millions?
Millions of dollars. Yeah, it's like that could be a bit of a clue as to why Azure's revenues goes up like $1 billion every quarter. It's like it's because they save internal
money. Are you going to talk about the major natural test that's probably coming to one of the data centers? Are you going to mention that?
Well, let me come back to that in a second.
Okay,
because of their efforts as far as saving themselves millions of dollars by, you know, like all the basic stuff shutting them down, now they have open source versions of their own snooze tooling, is what it's called in quotes. So snooze tooling, it allows people to turn off servers off and on via native Azure automation. So it's all open sourced. You can go and check out the tooling that they've got. It's mostly PowerShell, which you can hook it up to Azure automation and automate turning your servers off and on and so forth. It's what Microsoft IT use on a daily basis. And there'll be a link to that in the show notes. Now, Rob, what were you saying?
Well, there is currently a major weather event happening on the other side of the globe, which may, in fact, affect a couple of Azure data centers, may it not?
Correct. So US East is the one that's written on all the one of the websites internally at Microsoft, which has a lot of the content based in the US East data center, and has a message on saying that not the data center itself. I think the data center itself would be fine because it's a big chunk of concrete sitting on the ground. It's like it weighs a ton. I'd like to see any wind blow that away. Not, but basically it should be fine. It's the communications that surround that which, out of Microsoft's control, which could be challenging to stay up in the event of a hurricane. So in that event, they've got the central US region, which they can use instead. And the message is basically saying that, look, if there is any communication challenges getting people into the US East data center, well, their services will come up in US Central. So there's always a second copy. As it is with Azure, 38 regions globally around the world now.
Excellent. So when the hurricane comes to Canberra, we'll all have our tax files saved for us. So that's probably a big bonus, isn't it?
Couldn't be any safer. They'll have the technology like they got in Cairns, Rob, where when I used to live in Cairns a long time ago, the houses used to be actually tied to the ground with the steel rods.
Well, you know, Mother Nature, it's the mother of all inventions. So anyway, all right, so you've done some Azure stuff. Why don't I talk about bit of news, I think.
Got one more, and then I'll come across, because the news is, because it's not totally Azure, and it's like salesy thing, and I'm sure you'll like it.
I doubt that, but please continue.
Okay, all right. So, Rob, you've heard about stuff happening everywhere around the place, right?
No, I can't say that I've heard anything about any stuff happening anywhere.
Things change all the time when it comes to certain companies.
Example?
Well, what's the certain company that we're in bed with, literally? Most of the time.
VW?
Well, you know, the one that starts with M, possibly. Magnum and T. So anyway, there is such a thing called a challenger sales methodology. Okay, it's a common sales technique which CEB Global came up with, in which many IT companies, there you go, there's a clue, many IT companies use. It's the challenger sales methodology. Here we go, here are the highlights. So this is what it's all about, Rob. The buying experience is the biggest driver of customer loyalty. Your ability to offer unique and valuable perspectives on the customer's market. So help customers navigate alternatives, help customers avoid potential risks. Educate customers on new issues and outcomes. Okay, how you use the customer's time teaching and helping them through their complex buying decisions. Unlike other approaches which seek to understand what customers are trying to solve and map products and solutions to customers' needs, challengers develop perspective on a specific issue. There we go, Rob. I got that one out. And teach us how to think differently about their own business. Rather than leading with products and solutions, a challenger leads with where they see the customer has missed an opportunity or is losing money. Challengers create a case for change by discussing the true cost of the customers in action. Only at the very end does the challenger's unique solution come into play. And here's one for you, Rob. This is pretty cool. Challengers lead to, rather than leading with solutions. Challengers build constructive tension, the productive force that makes their customer want to act.
I've come up with a new sound effect, I've decided.
Hang on, one more. Challengers examine and redefine their customers' beliefs and assumptions and challenge their traditional way of doing business. Rob, what do you think of all of that as a way to do sales? I like it. It's not like the in-your-face salesman that comes in and says, you got to buy this. They're not interested in your business. They come in clearly and they don't care two hoots about what your business is about. But this is the complete reversal of your classic salesman. What do you think?
Tell me more.
Well, that's all I've got when it comes to this. And this is what I'm saying. Like, this is it. So do you like that aspect? Do you like that way of that approach?
Just give me 2 seconds to give you my reply.
Okay, so while I'm waiting for the...
Did you hear it?
Go right. Again.
Now that I've gonged you and we go on to something more interesting...
That was a loud gong, by the way.
I know. That's on-demand gong. I'll have to make sure that I prepare it next time.
Okay, go for it. I've got two more news articles, so we'll flick over to Rob. Go on, Rob. Yeah, what have you got on the cloud front at the moment?
Well, the big news here that was revealed by a couple of people across the internet, but it would seem that Microsoft Teams is taking over Skype for Business. So it would seem that Skype for Business may be getting a rename.
A makeover.
Makeover to be Microsoft Teams. So Microsoft Teams did come from the Skype group within Microsoft, and it would seem that with the success that Teams is having out there in the market and the acceptance out there, and the fact that it already has integrated Skype for Business connectivity in there, it would seem that Skype for Business may be going away as a name and Teams taking it over. So
interesting.
A couple of people, when they logged into their tenant, got a warning or information that it was about to undergo a change. It would seem that Microsoft may have made a bit of a faux pas letting that out a bit early. The chances are that they're waiting till Ignite to announce it, maybe, but Cat seems to be out of the bag now. So maybe it would seem a pretty good chance that Skype for Business is going to become Microsoft Teams, which is very interesting. I get the impression that there's probably going to be a basic component which is already integrated into the Microsoft Teams app, if you've seen it, and it's probably going to be the advanced option which will do all the stuff that Teams currently doesn't do around the communication stuff. So interesting to see. We'll keep our fingers on the pulse for that and let you know, but we'll put the link in the show notes for the articles that let the cat out of the bag, I think, on that one.
Wow. So that's going to be very, very interesting, because just we were getting used to the term, let's do a Skype call. Well, I'll Skype you. I'll Skype you, Rob. It was like the term Google something. I'll Google it and I'll Skype you.
Well, in the same sentence,
you can
around,
understand. It's like a, it's like a verb, and so now it's like, what am I going to do? I'm going to team you.
Well, I think the thing is, the way I've sort of not rationalized it, but the way I've thought about it is, the Skype for Business product has come from on-prem. So it's typically come from multi-server environments, very business orientated, somewhat difficult to use, I think, for the average user. So again, that's its heritage. And it's gone through a couple of renames. So it was Link, and now it has become Skype for Business, which is a bit of a mouthful. And we still have consumer Skype out there, which has got good acceptance in the market. I think is one of the larger telephony, I suppose, providers worldwide now. So given the success of Teams and the simplicity that you can kick off a Skype meeting within that, it makes a lot of sense, I think, to roll it into. And given the fact that the Skype for Business group in Microsoft was the one that's coming up with Teams, I think it makes a lot of sense. But in essence, I believe the change is around that Microsoft Teams is a totally cloud-based and born-in-the-cloud product, where Skype for Business has a legacy of on-prem. So that is my take on why the name
is changing. Yes. But Skype for Business is part of Microsoft Teams. So Microsoft Teams is a whole bunch more than what Skype for Business is.
Correct. But I think what you'll find is that Teams is a simplified interface over things like SharePoint and Skype for Business and everything chat together. And a whole range of things.
Yeah, it's everything together.
Correct.
Yeah, so when it comes to setting up a meeting with you in future, will I just say, that's okay, Rob, I'll just team you?
Now, what you'll do is you'll hit the bot, and the bot will make it all happen, and we won't have to do this podcast, or I won't have to do this podcast with anybody else but the bot.
Is that the same time when we'll have just self-driving cars everywhere? No one will actually have a steering wheel in the car?
And I can assure you that I will still have a steering wheel and a manual gear stick.
Yeah, but that's only to be driven on like a special racetrack, not on public roads.
Oh, no, it'll be on public roads, I'll assure you.
That'll be that time, because less manual people, drivers on the road, be less accidents. It's like...
Oh, look, I see a unicorn. Right, now back to the Office 365 news. Microsoft and Adobe are announcing a more advanced partnership. So they're getting in bed, I suppose, closer together now, and basically... What we're seeing is, again, another mention of Microsoft Teams, is that things like Adobe...
What did you say? Microsoft's going to buy Adobe?
No, not quite. It might be time for you to pay attention. So Microsoft...
Oh, sorry, did you say Citrix?
Not quite. Have you got it out of your system yet? Or do you want to get? You want me to get the real gong? Please. Sure? No, can I go?
No, I think
so. Are
you
sure? No.
Possibly.
Sorry? No. Now?
Go. Start?
No. Go. Wait. No? Can I go?
No. Yes. Now you can.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one thing that we could do with your donations, if you can please send them to us, is put in a mute button that lives on this side of the microphone.
Just like on Red Simons that used to have on Hey Hey It's Saturday.
Called Red Faces.
Red Faces.
Hey Hey It's Saturday.
Correct.
Go and look that up, kids, on the internet, on Wikipedia. Maybe we'll put the link in the show notes for people.
Come on, hurry up.
So,
you're changing the subject.
Can I finish?
Yes, you can.
Can I start? Can I go?
Correct.
You sure?
Maybe. Only if you want to. You don't have to if you don't want to. Are you sure you want to go?
No. I'm glad somebody's going to be editing this, because there's going to be a lot of crap. And the more difficult we make it, the more time it will consume for him. Good? Can we start?
I'm waiting for you to continue.
That's all right. Just wave to me across the internet. Let me know that I can actually speak now. The sign language between us is just going ballistic now. So, back to the start. Deep breath. Start again. Microsoft and Adobe have announced that they are becoming more integrated. So,
yay.
Oh, God. How long did that last? 20 seconds. Can I start again?
Well, keep going. I was just like applauding, because it was good news.
Yeah, I can think of other words besides applauding as to what you were doing. But anyway, so again, what they're looking to do is integrate the Adobe and the Microsoft cloud offerings in closer alignment. One of these is for Microsoft Teams to start using Adobe's Sign e-signature service. So that will, again, hopefully push forward the ability for users to be able to electronically sign documents and to be able to do that directly from inside the Teams app. So you've got a document you created in Word, you need it electronically signed. You can then integrate the Adobe sign in product for that. So looks really good. Nice. Also, the Adobe Creative Cloud and the document management sort of side is going to come together much closer. We'll hear more about that, I think, in the Ignite that's coming up shortly. And again, we will also see a range of analytics come from Adobe that will also integrate into Power BI. So again, good news that large software providers around that probably everybody uses, I would suggest, just about these days, aligning their products and their offerings. And I like the fact that it's bringing it into Teams and is going to make it even easier for users to especially sign documents, which is certainly going to cut down on paperwork.
I like the fact that we use we may be using Adobe products here on the Need to Know podcast, and I also like the fact that with Adobe, they changed not that long ago. They used to develop, because they developed for both Mac operating systems and Windows operating systems, you see. And so back in the day, they used to develop first and foremost for Mac, right? And then so Windows was also the second seat.
Mark. Had,
yes.
Sorry, keep going.
I'll call you Mark. So
Mark.
Yes.
Sorry, keep going.
Hang on, there's a volume button here for you. So Mac was also always the primary, but now they've reversed that since they've jumped into bed with Microsoft, and now Windows is the, and there was an announcement a couple of years ago, in fact, about this too. Windows is now the primary platform which they develop for, and it's the other way around. So Mac is the secondary. So that's why the Adobe products
Mark.
Much, much more reliable than they used to be.
Azure time.
Azure Management Libraries for .NET version 1.2. So, yes, Microsoft released .NET version 1.2 of the Azure Management Libraries for .NET. This release adds support for additional security and deployment features and more Azure services. So we're talking about manage service identity, create users in Azure Active Directory, update service principles and assign permissions to apps, storage service encryption, deploy web apps and functions using MS Deploy, network watcher service, health service. And if you want to know more about the .NET on Azure version 1.2, there's a link in my blog site, and it'll go through to the page in which has all the information on there. Also, too, the other news article that came through, which is quite a big one because it got a lot of retweets on Twitter, is Web App for Containers and Azure App Service on Linux. So recently announced is the general availability of Azure App Service on Linux and Web App for Containers. So let's talk about the Azure App Service on Linux to begin with. It's a built-in image option running on Linux as an extension of a current Azure App Service offering catering to developers who want to use FTP or Git, deploy .NET Core, Node, PHP or Ruby applications to Azure App Service running on Linux. This is a vanilla app service scenario powered by Linux OS. It's pretty cool. So the Web App for Containers is catered more towards developers who want to have more control over not just code, but also the different packages, runtime framework, tooling, etc. that are installed on their containers. It allows developers to focus on composing their containers without worrying about managing and maintaining an underlying container orchestrator. The Web App for Containers feature is based on Docker containers. Good old Docker. Rob, IoT as well. It's the last part I've got. You want to go with one of yours and come back to this in a sec?
No, let's finish this up. Let's let you fully explore your expressionism here.
Okay. Azure IoT device provisioning. Have you been playing with any IoT devices, Rob?
Every day?
Like what? Salt and pepper shakers?
No, I'm building a bot army and they're coming over to your place shortly, so look out for them.
Fantastic. In Azure news, so Microsoft this week announced the preview of its Azure IoT Hub device provisioning service. It's now available in regions, the main ones, East US, West Europe, and in Southeast Asia, Singapore. So the service is designed to automate the provisioning of Internet of Things devices, avoiding the tedium of having to manually process them. With the Internet of Things, organizations may be tasked with putting connection credentials on each of millions of devices, which is not good. The devices should really have hardware security modules in place. That would be the best practice to store security keys. However, the provisioning of the service can still be used with devices lacking those modules. A Windows TPM, as in Trusted Platform Module Simulator, can be used in it. So more details to this in the show notes, Rob.
Good stuff. All right. You all done?
All done.
Now, be a good little boy and just wait.
Would you like me to mute my microphone?
I would like you to mute the microphone and for me to be able to unmute it, but I don't think that's going to be possible.
Well, all you got to do to unmute is say, Mark, unmute, and it'll be unmuted.
Until Mark, then, stay muted for the rest of the episode.
All right, I'm turning it down right now. It's going right now.
Excellent. All right, last two from me are another thing around Teams. Microsoft has written a blog post that will show us how to use restrict the usage of Microsoft Teams using Azure AD Conditional Access. So you're able to go in and basically set a policy, and that will give you the ability to determine when Teams can be used by your users. Very, very clever little way of doing it. Works really well. So you can look at it by IP address. You can look at it by security. So you can, again, have multiple policies. Multiple applications are supported, not just Teams. So there is a range of applications that are supported. And again, we'll put the link in the show notes so you can have a look at how to do that. At this stage, the conditional access is the requirement is Azure AD Premium. You can certainly get a free 30-day trial of that inside your tenant to see what it's like and what it does. But pretty cool technology. So it gives you the control of your applications in Office 365 outside the work environment if you need to do that. Last one is that one of the applications that probably has lagged behind
preview.
Many of the others
portal.azure.com.
The desktop world is Skype for Business for Mac, and there has been a major update, and we'll put the link in the show notes, but we're getting closer and closer with functionality to the standard Windows version, which is great. So if you're on a Mac, make sure that you do download that update. The other thing I would advise you on the Mac side is to make sure that you do check for updates regularly, and if you feel so inclined, put yourself on the fast ring of the Office updates. That'll give you basically the latest product and software on your machine. And I've got that running on my Mac, and basically we're getting major updates every week. So the feature parity is getting closer, I think, on the Mac for those people who do want to use the Mac, which is great news. Shows Microsoft is working busily on software all around the space for the applications on Android, iOS, and also the Mac, probably not so much on Windows 10 anymore for phone, but on the desktop. So I think with that, Mark, we're pretty much done. A shorter episode. We'll tack something interesting
to
the end of this.
You're going to put something on the end of it, aren't you?
Well, I'll think about it. I don't know. I might be about unicorns, pixies, and rainbows. How about that?
So currently we're up to how many minutes? 25 minutes-ish. So which means you've got another 20 minutes to fill, Rob. So
that is pretty easy if I don't get interrupted.
Okay, done. So how about, because I'm flying out tomorrow being Sunday, I'm off to Adelaide, so I've got to head to bed and pack and everything else, which is probably the reason why we've cut the first part of this podcast short. But Rob, we've agreed that you'd, you know, tack something on the end of this one, because next week in Adelaide I'll catch up with the certain MVP in Adelaide that we're talking about, and I'll try and get some content out of this person to fill on our next podcast coming up in the near future after this one. So for this one, however, I'll hand the reins over to you. How does that sound?
Probably it sounds fantastic, but why don't you let people know how they can get in contact with you and in contact with the show before you disappear off on the big silver aeroplane all the way over to Adelaide?
Yes, because let's face it, Adelaide is not down south, is it, from Sydney? It's pretty much due west. But yes, how to get in contact with me? It's Twitter is the best way, at Mark Keen, which is MarkKean, or the Need to Know Podcast handle for both Twitter and Facebook. It's at N2K Podcast. Also, the email address to contact us is feedback@dodo.cloud. And if you'd like to see all of our episodes for the Need to Know Podcast, check out podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
And who else do we have to thank for this episode?
We have to thank yourself, Rob, of course, because you, without you, it wouldn't happen. And also, we have to thank Rode Microphones, because Rode Microphones provide the audio. Otherwise, it would sound like... Yeah, it would sound like that, basically, with no audio whatsoever. And we also have to thank Rob Ingram MicroCloud.
Excellent. Well, you can contact me via Twitter, at DirectorCIA. So I want to take a moment to talk about a different approach to Office 365 adoption. Now, the most typical approach taken is obviously to do emails and then to look at doing something like SharePoint TeamSite to move the files over from files and folders. And then, again, typically people look to map drives like they used to have back in their network share days. Now, Office 365 obviously is a large range of services that most people purchase when they buy the suite licensing. So not only do they have email and team sites, they have OneDrive, they have Yammer, they have Skype for Business, they have a whole range of products. Now, typically the adoption of these ancillary products are not well established. So what we're finding is that people use email, obviously, that's a given. Files and folders, they move typically into a team site, but they use it very much in the traditional files and folders. So they have one document library, very deep folder structure, and they try and work out of that one environment rather than using the total facilities that are available to them. Now, part of that comes back to, I think, the lack of having an adoption plan. So an adoption plan means that you need to develop a process that you can implement on a regular basis that helps users understand what's available in Office 365 and, importantly, how they can use it in their business. And thirdly, how they can use it personally to transform the way they work for the better. Now, the majority of this is a human problem. The technology is there and does great things, and unfortunately a lot of technical people are very focused on the technical outcome. They want to get to the technical endpoint. So if we're talking about emails, for example, what we're looking at is, okay, I want to get to the end of the email migration, get all those emails migrated for my users so that I can move on to the next thing. Now, the reality here is that once you've done emails, then you need to look at lighting up other services, because users are looking to use those to work in different ways today. So if they aren't given those tools, they'll typically go out and find them themselves, use consumer-based tools to get the job done. And that's not something that you want to happen, because they've already got the product with Office 365 nine times out of 10, and also it moves it outside the compliance boundary of Office 365. So again, part of this is more than just doing email, more than just moving files and folders, doing a drag and drop. Now, that requires thinking about Office 365 in the human context. So you've got to think about the end users. Now, the way I would suggest you need to think about this, and an approach that works well, I believe, is to focus on what I call the ME services, all right? So the ME services I define as Yammer, OneDrive, OneNote, and Delve, and they are typically the services I'd be recommending that people should be looking to put into a business first. Now, of course, we're going to put in there, we're going to give them email, we're going to give them the dial tone they're used to, but then I think the step up comes to looking at something like Yammer. So the reason that you do Yammer, I believe, is that firstly, there's no infrastructure impact. You can go and put that in and you can get users using it, and
you can put it on their mobile devices, so they can get access anywhere. They access it on a web. Like I said, there's no infrastructure. And the important thing is it's something very different from the way that they've been used to before. Now, one of the big benefits of Yammer is that information generally is public. Now, that allows people to see what's going on. It allows people to contribute and get recognition for that contribution. But the most important part of working in public is the fact that it's searchable. So if you send information in emails, that information then is siloed within that person's email. If you need to get it to two people, then you've got to send two copies. Whereas with Yammer, you post it once, you can notify people, you can get the comments from those that you notify, but you can also then get additional comments from others. And this is where you get the contributions across the organization. Now, the big benefit here is that it moves the business away from being a siloed organization to being something that works in public, that shares information. And for a lot of people, this is basically something that is very enticing and something they see commonly outside in the consumer space, in something like Facebook, LinkedIn, those social networks. Now, it's not just a case of throwing Yammer at an organization. Once again, there needs to be some thought and there needs to be some process put in behind the scenes to make this effective. Now, the way that I suggest it's approached is that you create a Yammer network, and the very first group that you create in Yammer is called Social. Now, the reason that I suggest you create a group called Social is, firstly, it gives people an area to share things like birthdays and photos and kids' soccer matches and general chit-chat around the office. And that's important to an organization. That's important for users to feel connected, that they have a social space. The second reason is that it gives a delineated area that people can talk socially. If you don't want to be part of that social chit-chat, then you don't join that group. Now, the other side of it is that Yammer, like a social network, is very familiar to a lot of users. You basically have an area you go and you post an update, you can put links, you can comment, you can like. And by putting it in a social context, we're not forcing them to talk about business. We're giving users the freedom to talk about topics that interest them. And what we're aiming to do here is we're aiming then to drive adoption. So users will use a system that they're interested in, that they see no limits, that they're not forced into restrictions about. So again, if you make it social, if you make it just general guidance that obviously it has to be polite and it has to be normal conversation, but again, it's not necessarily about the business, it's where people can share information. So think of it like the water cooler or the kitchen, where users can aggregate together and share information. Now, once you see users going in and using Yammer and starting to interact with it via the social group, the second one I would suggest you create is a tech support group, an Office 365 101, if you like. Into this area, you encourage users to go and ask questions about Yammer, about the services, about what's happening with technology. Now, the advantage again is once they post it, it becomes public, it becomes searchable. So you can teach them that, in fact, if they're looking for information, they can return to that location and do a search, and maybe that topic has been mentioned or it has already been answered by somebody else. The second thing is they can go in and they can then contribute on anything that's in there. They can be involved in the conversation. Now, what you generally find is that you need to obviously get the tech support ID started, but then you'll find out that users across the organization, a small subset of users, typically those known as the innovators in our demographic, they're going to be keen to go in there and show their knowledge and share their knowledge with others in the business. So they're going to dive in and ask questions. They're going to be in there putting interesting links. They're going to be sharing how they solve problems with others, and again, probably going in there and supporting other people. So all you need to do is seed this tech support area generally, get it started, get some information flowing, get things happening in that area. And then basically what you can do, you can then generally step back, because you'll find that your users gravitate to it. A certain level, a certain number of users will be the ones who will dominate, who will drive, and they will happily provide that information on an ongoing business in that environment. And that's going to make it more valuable for everybody else. So once you've got those two areas, which are typically non-business related or directly related to the business, then you can look at expanding into the specific business, maybe a project, maybe HR wants their own area, maybe finance wants their own area. So you can grow from there. Again, Yammer's a great way for management to be able to post information across the organization and have it seen by everybody. Now, remember that Yammer, like a social network, again, you're going to have to give people guidance. It's not about giving them rules. It's just giving them guidance about how you want them to play in the sandbox. You know, you need to have good community behavior. These things aren't tolerated. Bullying, for example, is not tolerated. So you've just got to set the guidelines. Nothing, again, too onerous, just enough to make sure everybody plays fairly and knows the boundaries in that environment. Now, from Yammer, my suggestion is to move on to something like OneDrive. Now, OneDrive is designed as personal storage space for each individual user. The great thing is that each licensed user gets a terabyte or more of space to put their information. So the ideal information that goes into OneDrive is stuff that is not being backed up currently. It's probably on the user's C drive, on their desktop, in their My Documents or on USB drives. They're not being backed up. So by moving this to OneDrive, A, the users are going to firstly get the comfort to know that their data is being backed up. It's all in one location. They have, you know, effectively almost an infinite amount of storage they can use. They can access this information on their mobile devices. They can access it on their desktop via the Sync client. They can also access this from home once they've logged into the system. So this makes a lot of sense. A lot of people use these tools to get access to information. And the benefits to the business are that once all the user's information is moved into a tool like OneDrive, then basically what happens is it's all compliant, the business maintains control of it and can make sure that users aren't doing the wrong thing. And importantly, the information is being backed up. All right. Now, the other good thing about starting with OneDrive rather than Teams and team sites is OneDrive, again, is a simple service that does one thing. It really is designed to hold personal documents. Now, sure, you can share documents out of that, but it doesn't have the complexity of a SharePoint team site. It doesn't have the complexity of Microsoft Teams. Now, if you're moving users into this environment, you want to keep it simple, just one small step at a time. So if you show them OneDrive, you can show them how to move their files up there. They become familiar with working with document libraries. They understand how to upload documents, version control, how to share documents, how to move documents around, and how to access documents. That's because OneDrive is effectively just a document library. So rather than overloading users with a whole team site arrangement and calendars and contacts and intranets and navigation, OneDrive's going to give them a good start into the SharePoint concept, into this idea of putting their information, their files into the cloud and all the benefits. Now, a big benefit for the users once they move their information into OneDrive is, again, that it's searchable. In the top left corner of OneDrive, you'll find a search box. You can go in there or the user can go in there. They can run a search and they will be able to search not only the name of their document, but also anything inside the context of those documents as well. So again, they're probably fighting with where's that document, where did I put it, where did I store it? So moving it to one location makes a lot of sense that I can access anywhere and also gives me the ability to be able to search that information quickly and easily. And then if I need to, I can share it with others. So rather than sending them the file and creating multiple versions, I can share a link and I retain a single source of truth. But importantly, when it comes to the adoption side, is you're teaching your users the first lesson about working with team sites. You're teaching them how to use a document library. Now, the psychological side of this also is the fact that if you give a user their own space to play in that isn't affected by anybody else, that isn't something that other people are looking over their shoulder or viewing at the same time, they're going to feel more comfortable to go in and experiment, to go in and try the technology. This is the idea around the me services. So again, OneDrive is about me. It's about my files. It's about my information without anybody else having to look over my shoulder. So if I make a mistake uploading files or creating files, nobody else but me is going to see. So it gives users the confidence that when they get to team sites and things like Microsoft Teams, hey, I've already seen this. I know what this document library is. I know how documents upload. I'm not so scared of it. If you come the other way and basically force users into using document libraries in team sites first, again, it's sort of two or three steps that they've got to conquer. And if they do have a setback or something doesn't work or they don't understand it, then it's going to be very hard to build that confidence back up. So OneDrive is a great way to give users confidence with working with files in Office 365 by keeping it simple, by just making a single document library that nobody else has access to but them. Now, from OneDrive, I recommend you look at OneNote. So OneNote, again, is an Office-based application, but it's available on the web. It's available on every platform, on every mobile device, once again. Now, OneNote is a great way to capture information and make it digital. Now, what's the benefit of making information digital? Well, the first thing is that it's searchable. Okay, so we're coming back to this concept of search. Yammer, making information public means that it's searchable. OneDrive, by putting my information in one location, makes it all searchable for me. OneNote, again, anything I put in there, notes, files, photos, all that sort of stuff becomes searchable. Now, of course, OneNote means that it can capture not only type text, you can store documents in there, you can store graphics, you can store writing, you can store all sorts of information in a structure which suits you. So one of the things I found that works well is to establish basically a diary, what I call the day book for users. So imagine the months across the top, January, February, March, April, and then inside each month for the page, you have the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and whatever. Now, why is that going to be effective? Well, think about it. All many, many users in your environment are probably running around with notepads or diaries and writing stuff down. When they go to meetings, when they come from meetings, they've always got a notebook on hand. Now, I think that they're probably not going to abandon that notebook, but something like OneDrive gives them additional functionality that they can start using. And the big things are search. If I put something in there, I can search. You can't really search a paper notebook. You have to make sure that you have a good indexing system to go back. But with OneNote, I can just do a search. I can look for it by day. I can do all sorts of stuff like that really quickly and easily. And I can do it on any mobile device. So I can take my OneNote to my meeting along with my pad, and then probably spend not quite as much time writing notes. I can take photos of the whiteboard when I finish and they go straight into OneNote. So again, all these little services make a big difference to users. You need to show them how to use it, come up with a standard training, onboarding, and again, how-to videos and whatnot to show them how to make the most of OneNote. And the great thing is they'll probably start using it personally as well. So again, make sure that you look at implementing a OneNote arrangement. Show them how easy it is to create a OneNote from their OneDrive and then synchronize that to their desktop, to their mobile device, keep all their notes up to date in one location. Most users have never seen OneNote and it really blows them away. And it's a really simple app. There's not a lot to configure and it works really, really well. So again, certainly recommend that you consider adopting or putting OneNote into your adoption a plan environment for your users, because it is a me service, especially when it starts out. It's my notebook, it's my personal notes. I can dump any sort of information in there and I can easily and quickly find it. Now, the last me service I think is Delve. Now, why is Delve a me service? Well, the way I see it is that Delve is your personal search engine. You go to Delve to look at a single pane of glass across all the information in your Office 365 environment. Top left corner of Delve is the search function. I can go in there and search across my team sites, my OneDrive, my files, all that sort of stuff. My Delve also shows me pictures of people that I work with. It shows me what documents they're working on. I can look at documents in my feed. So rather than having to worry about whether a document is five or six levels deep, or did I put it in this team site, or did I put it in OneNote, where is that document? I can just use my Delve to look at my feed, see what documents I've been working on or others have been working on recently. And then if I can't find it, I can use search. So think about how you yourself find information today. You'll go out and typically run a search on an internet search engine, okay? Same thing should apply internally. It doesn't mean that you abandon the files and folders and the structure, but they become less important. Users can find information themselves. They can self-service if you show them how to search. So again, in things like Delve, in things like OneNote and OneDrive and Yammer and Team Sites, make sure you show them how to do a search, how to find the information that they're after. So Delve is great because, again, we have mobile apps on the desktop. We have mobile apps, we have desktop apps. We can use it to triage our information quickly and easily, respond to it. We can create boards to aggregate information. We can see what other people are working on. So again, it's this single dashboard across your environment. The bigger the organization gets, the more important Delve becomes. Now, one of the key features, I think, of Delve to make sure that you do put in place to drive adoption is the photo. So Delve allows you to update a profile, your skills, your experiences, but one of the key features is the photo. So make sure that each user has their photo so they can identify, firstly, other people in the organization, but again, on a psychological level, they don't identify with a technology unless they see themselves. So when they see a Delve portal with their picture, it becomes their portal, it becomes their system, it becomes their search engine. So again, technically, may not make a lot of sense, but psychologically, it's a big thing to get users to adopt systems and giving them ownership of the system, making them see themselves in there, a mirror, again, goes a long way. It may seem simple, but it's very important, I believe, to have that in there. So if you haven't got a set of decent photos for employees, basically go and just get a local photographer, come in with a drop sheet, sit in the boardroom, and then just have everybody go through and get a professionally done picture. Now, give the users the picture. They can upload the picture. They can put in their LinkedIn profile. They can use it in Facebook, whatever. So give them the picture once it's done, but make sure that that goes up into Delve. Now, once you've done the Me services, Yammer, OneDrive, OneNote, and Delve, the users have a far better grasp of the system. They have a more comfortable with the environment. They're much keener to use their technologies because they haven't felt pushed to do it for the business, right? They've done it for themselves. So they're confident now and they start branching out. So the question then becomes is, okay, if we're doing all this and we're making all this Me services, what's the point I know that we can move our users into the Us services? So the team sites, the teams, all that sort of stuff. So what you'll find is if you've done adoption correctly, what you'll find is your users will come to you and they will say things like, you know, this Yammer's really good. Could we use it for this business project? Or this would be really good to solve this problem. Or can this department have its own Yammer network? At that point, you know you're getting adoption. Same sort of thing when you hear about the wins with OneNote. You know, users come and say, this OneNote has changed the way that I work. Could we use it for this group project? Could we use it with these outside people? When your users come to you and start asking you about how to use the services they're familiar with inside the business for business group environment tasks, then you know that your adoption is working. Okay, up to that point, you know users still haven't quite got it and you may need to do some more work. But that is the benchmark. When users come to you and basically say, right, I'm comfortable with the Me stuff, how do we use this for us? How do we use this in a group? That's when you know that you've achieved successful adoption. So again, hopefully this has given you a bit of an idea, a bit of a background, and challenged you to think a little bit differently when it comes to Office 365 adoption. Yes, we need email, we need files. They are obviously the lifeblood and the dial tone. However, remember that moving technology is a people problem. It's really about the people. Getting them to adopt the new environment is going to be your biggest challenge, because if they don't feel comfortable, they're going to want to do things the way they've always done. They're going to want to work in a comfortable way that they perceive is most productive for them. You're going to need to give them and show them how the tools can make their life easier. And the way to do that in a staged manner is to focus on the me services, Yammer, OneDrive, OneNote, and Delve first. Get them happy, get them familiar, get them seeing the benefits with those products on an individual level. Once you've got that, once they understand that, then understanding it on an us level throughout the business is going to be so much easier. You're going to get people volunteering to do this, so they'll be drawn to using the technology rather than you having to push them to actually use the technology. So again, try and think about things a bit differently. Look at it as a people challenge. Look at processes you can put in place to encourage things like participation in Yammer networks, to understand and work with Delve, to put their files in OneDrive. Make it as easy for users to do this, because the benefits and the payoffs will certainly come when you come to the us service. You won't have to spend as much time doing that because you've given the user the foundation that they're after. So again, I'll put the link to this blog post and a couple of others in the show notes so you can review them. Remember, if you have any questions about Office 365 adoption or the services that I've mentioned, you can hit me up directly via Twitter at DirectorCIA, and happy to talk to you and explain to you some of the more in-depth ideas and in-depth ways of going about this. But hopefully, again, you've had some thought here, or you can sit down and have a think as to really, after email and basic file services, what comes next? What's your process? My advice to you is get into the me services, come up with a plan to get users using services like Yammer, OneDrive, OneNote, and Delve. And I think then you'll be very surprised at the results that you'll achieve.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.